Hey everyone, welcome. It is the 3rd of December. It's the year 2024, I believe. And we are on our final training call for SPSM for this round, obviously. And sorry I couldn't make it last week. The internet went out and even the phone lines went out in the hotel I was in, so I could not hop on. All was fine. I think it was a glitch. But hopefully you were able to get into the Feldenkraisian Learning Training Call and review that. Today, we're going to get into some integration. I'm going to read a story from one of our old SPSM members that really displays integration and how, A, it's important to redo these lessons over and over and over again, and our alumni can attest to this is not something we do once. I see some nods. It's something we, thanks to Ellen and Savannah are on my screen. There are frequent flyers here, and you both know the importance of reviewing. And that doesn't mean that you're not getting it. That doesn't mean that you're slow or behind. It's like anything that you learn with skill, you have to repeat it. You know, you don't learn how to cook an amazing 5-course meal once. That takes, for some of us, years of practice. You don't learn language in 3 months when you're little. It takes years and years. The good news with this work is that the nervous system wants to be regulated. It really does. And it's that element of knowing that's our goal, to keep building regulation more and more over time. So as we wrap up, because we've got this week, there's a wrap-up call next week, again, Tuesday, same time, same place. Just remember, I always remind everybody of this, we continue to offer you support for moderation in the forums until January. It's a specific date in January. It's not on the top of my mind right now, but Ari or Rebecca, you could pop that in the chat and I'll mention it. And then, of course, everything on the site stays alive and at your fingertips. So even when we end moderation in January, everything that you see now and everything that will be added will continue to be there. Okay. So let's see. People are on lab 5. Another person that's been here for long, Jennifer. 4 years you've been playing with SPSM. You're on lab 5. Thank you for sharing that. Lab 10, someone said eager to start over and titrate more. Yep. I have learned through speaking to many alum that some of you will have been the good student and you've gone through every single lab, every single lesson as we've moved through these 12 or so weeks. And often what people find is that when they come again, they go much slower. They take more time. And that's sometimes just the way it goes. So nothing wrong with completing all 10 labs this round, but you might find when you go back, you go a lot slower. One person said, Heather, I took 6 months to complete the 21-day tune-up, and now I'm in my first round of SPSM. I've mostly kept up, and I'm in lab 10 now. Wonderful. Another person, I'm re-listening to the Q&A calls. That's wonderful. So just a note that Seth's Q&A calls, and he's often joined by Rebecca and Mara and Jen, those are a wealth of information, and you'd be surprised what you get when you go through them again, right? Sort of like reading your favorite book or watching a movie again, you see things that you don't notice at the beginning. Someone's working on advanced diaphragms in lab 9, lab 2, Lab 10, lesson 2. So everyone's a little all over the place, and that's exactly how we want it. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in on that, chiming in. 7th round, someone said, and I'm mostly hanging out in lab 1. Cool. Do not underestimate the first few lessons, really learning about your resources and really using those positive resources as much as you can. All right. So, handouts, we are going to get into. So, the actual title for today is, again, it's training call number 9, neuroplastic healing sequencing. Theory and practice equals application and integration. So of course, smart body, smart mind is a lot of theory, a lot of practice. You combine those together and we want to apply that and integrate that into life. So I'll ask another question. Here's another quick prompt for the chat. Who here has found, now that we've kind of been about 3 or so months in, that you are finding that you're naturally orienting a little bit more? You're listening to your impulses a little bit more. Maybe when you are moving around in your kitchen, cooking food, washing dishes, you're aware of where your skeleton is, that potent posture. There's just a bit more awareness of your body. Maybe when you go to bed at night, you tune into your breathing in a different way, or you touch your diaphragms just to connect. So some folks are saying yes, impulses, yes, orienting more, slowing down more. Yep. More aware of my inside and outside, listening more to my impulses, listening to tension in specific body parts and how I hold my breath. Great. Orienting and exhaling are my resources at the moment. Wonderful. Tuning into exercises when anxiety comes up. So again, with that fight flight, trying to replace that word anxiety with fight flight survival stress. So when that comes up, to pause, acknowledge, and work with it instead of just pushing through. Awesome. A little bit more, but the survival reflexes and dissociation pop up rapidly, someone said. Yeah. So this is something that you will continue to work with, because these are things that can't get rewired instantly. So when we have lived with, say, dissociation, going into shutdown, going into freeze, it's going to take time for our system to trust that we don't have to have those reflexes, quote unquote, those survival responses. So again, this comes in to kidney adrenals, working with the brainstem, the gut, really letting your system know, what might it be like to consider that maybe there's a little bit of safety around, right? I use my words very carefully there. Maybe consider a little bit, just maybe, that maybe it's not so dangerous out there in the way that you were born into and raised with unsafety. So it's this constant, we could say, just over and over again, reminding ourselves, we're okay. This is my environment. These are my responses. These are my impulses. These are completely normal. All right. Fifth round, someone said, so much nuance of awareness happening. Great. All right. I'll turn on this light. It's getting dark in here. Okay, folks, let's get going. So reference material at the very top here. Very top here. The power of neuroplastic healing and the 5 stages everyone must understand. So we've been implicitly means naturally working with the 5 stages of neuroplastic healing sequencing. And this is a specific ebook that I wrote quite a while ago, and it's on the additional resources in the SBSM program site. And I'm going to go through those today. We're going to break them each down with examples. I'm going to read a story, as I mentioned. So that is just for reference. Another thing to review as we come into this sort of ending of this 16th round are the pregame videos. So these were the videos that you might have watched at the very beginning for some of you years ago, about feeling our resistance. Who remembers those? The importance of sleep and rest, the importance of food, good food, the importance of activity, physical activity. It doesn't have to be athletic, Olympic activity, but getting our body moving, getting outside. The importance of scheduling or not scheduling. Some of us, we were schedulers growing up and everything was perfectly lined up to the T, right? Almost in a way to control and have control over something. So for some of us, we scheduled ourselves to death and we felt that stress, or maybe we didn't know that it was a stress. So some of us, as our in our adult years, we need to be a little looser with our schedules, a little less stressed about our schedules. For others, you might be the flip side. There wasn't enough boundary. There wasn't enough containment. There wasn't any rules set that were important. And so everything's a little kind of floaty in the air and not ordered. So for some of us, we might need to have more structure to our day and to how we structure and schedule ourselves. You know where you fit in that. And it's about figuring out what works for you when it comes to practice, right? Setting up time to practice or being a little more loose on practice and just trusting that your system will integrate naturally. Obviously, the three-part healing trauma video training, this is an older training of mine. Again, just a reminder, that is where the swimming pool and beach ball analogy was originally taught. So that video has the actual graphics of the swimming pool moving and the beach balls moving and all that. And then don't forget Seth's healing music. I know some of you have taken advantage of the music he's composed for the nervous system and for regulation. So has anybody tried his music? I know obviously some alum have, but that's something to look at. Again, lots to play with. Don't forget Elia's movement lessons to shake it up a little bit and do something a bit different. Yep, his lessons are great. So plenty to work with. Don't be overwhelmed by all at all. Move through it as you feel the need to. Choose things to try every now and again, even if you've moved through the lessons and the labs. Okay, so again, all these are on the additional resources section on the program site. All right, I'm gonna have a little water and then we'll get going. Yes, someone said beautiful music. It is beautiful music. It's best to listen to it with some good speakers. It's not as good when you play it out of your computer unless you've got some good earbuds or normal speakers in your home, and then you can really feel the sense of the music. So let's get into the neuroplastic healing stages. So this is referenced directly from a book called The Brain's Way of Healing, Norman Doidge. Okay. And in that book, he talks about five stages. One of the stages is working with clean water, making sure we have clean air, good food. We're not consuming toxins. We're not bathing in toxins, although I know that's very difficult these days. But one of the stages that isn't here because it sort of falls out of the scope of SBSM, although I know it's important. And I talk about this in other forms outside of the course. It's just this ability to live as cleanly as we can so that our human cells aren't fighting against toxicities. So that would be the first stage, but these are the other stages that we are directly working with in SBSM. So the first one, the first word there that's missing is stimulation, neurostimulation. Okay. And that is really everything we do in SBSM, anything we do when we learn, when we move, when we go outside. As humans, we're in this world of being neurostimulated through our environment. So, movement, touch, light, sound, visualization, all those are there. Listening to music. Right? Can calm us. It can activate us in good ways. Cup of tea can soothe us. The scent can soothe us. The warmth of the sun can soothe us. Cooling down when we're really warm and hot, that can soothe us. So stimulation doesn't necessarily mean activating ourselves into survival stress. It can be a stimulus that brings us down. Just like our resources. Okay. Just like our resources. Next one, Neuromodulation. Modulation is the word there. So this is Norman Doidge's word for regulation. So he calls it modulation. So I want to respect the words he's using, but this is also known as regulation. So settling the noisy brain, the central nervous system, and the overall autonomic nervous system. So getting it out of that fight, flight, freeze, shutdown, and getting ourselves into, and we'll get into this today, that engagement, that ventral vagal, that connection, that rest, digest. C, neurorelaxation, relaxation. So again, he uses the word relaxation. If I were to change those words, I would say neuro rest repair. Not that that is means anything specifically, but that's rest digest. When your system is repairing the cells, the viscera, stitching things back up at night so that everything is more repaired, more rejuvenated. We want that rest digest. And then the final one, D, neuro differentiation. Differentiation. So that's a long word, fancy word for refining our skill, getting more masterful. For example, when a little person is learning how to hold things, right? If you've had kids or if you've been around kiddos, when they grab the cup, it's with both hands, right? Their paws are a little clunkier at the beginning, their hands. As they get more differentiated in these hands, they can hold with just a few fingers, or two, sorry, two fingers. Can't really hold with one finger, right? And there's more of that dexterity in the fingers. Same with writing, right? You start writing, they hold the pen, pencil with the full hand, and then you get more skilled. That is a very simple explanation of differentiation of our motor movement. But of course, with our nervous system and learning how to modulate, if I use modulate, regulate, we get more differentiated in our ability to sense stress, to sense activation. Is that accurate? Is that really a threat? Not a threat. So again, there's this ability to differentiate not just our movement, but our ability to sense what's in the world and accurately perceive things. Okay, let's get into page two. And what we're going to do, if you flip through the pages, you'll see each one we're going to break down in a little more detail. So neurostimulation right through to neurodifferentiation. Okay, so let's go. So again, neurostimulation. So the first word there is all. All. All labs bring in this stage. Because you're learning, right? So you're stimulating your brain centers, you're stimulating your senses. Maybe your memory, your movement. So there's some aspect of stimulation throughout. Now I'm going to read this long paragraph. It's a little wordy, so follow along with me. This is a book, very old book, written by a Russian, we could call him a neuroscientist back in the day. His name was Nikolai Bernstein. And it's called Dexterity and Its Development. Now, what's interesting about him, and I was introduced to him in my Feldenkrais training, is he was sort of, who's here heard of Ivan Pavlov conditioning, those classic experiments where he would have a dog and a bell, and he'd make them salivate with the bell with food. And it really showed this ability to condition a mammal, an animal, at the drop of a sound. And of course, we as humans, we also can be conditioned, and many of us have been due to school system and discipline and all the things that we're trying to undo right now as we learn regulation. But Bernstein was sort of the opposition of Pavlov. And from what I heard, the government back in the day shut his labs down because he was trying to show the ability for us to learn as humans and develop and differentiate. And we didn't have to be these conditioned animals. And so this is a paragraph that really talks about the importance of repeating. So this comes back to review and repetition, but not in a way that is, I would call it rote. And that's just a fancy word for just doing it for the sake of doing it, not thinking, not feeling. So he writes in this book, the learned movement. So think about, as I speak, think about how you have engaged with the Feldenkrais lessons, how you've engaged with orienting, maybe even how you've engaged with touch as you connect with, say, the diaphragms, the joints, all these things. So he writes, the learned movement must be actually performed many times in order to actually experience all the sensations which form the basis for its sensory corrections. So what he means there is we have to really sense and perform things many times so that we get more accurate, so that we feel up, oh, it's a little too much or it's a little too little. I need to do it again to correct. That's what we would do. And we're learning something with skill as opposed to learning something because we're being maybe punished. You know, it's like, you've got to get it right. You've got to get it right. So he's really talking about sensing, how we sense. So he writes again, it must be performed many times to allow the brain sensory areas to become acquainted with all the variety of deviations and modifications, and to combine a vocabulary for all future deciphering. That's a lot of words there to basically say we need to get aware of all the quirks, all the times we might not get something right, and that's okay. But can we sense it? Can we learn from it? Can we correct? Can we make it easier? Can we make it simpler? Can we make it less withholding our breath, less withholding our hands and being tense? That's just one example. He then continues, certainly the most sensible correction training, because there's nothing wrong with correcting ourselves, right? And learning. Like, if you never learned properly how to correct the mistakes driving a car, you would never be safe driving a car, right? So you have to learn how to do things correctly in some cases. So he says the most sensible correction training would be organized in a way that combines a minimum, combined a minimum minimization of effort with a large variety of well-designed sensations, and that creates optimal and that created optimal conditions for meaningfully absorbing and memorizing those sensations. So see how sensation-based this is, how connected it is to minimizing our effort. In other words, minimizing the strain, the stress. Often when I would teach a neurosensory exercise, you might recall in some of the lessons, I'll have you notice something and then I'll have you sense, are you holding your breath? Or is there anywhere in your body where you're tense? When you're maybe moving your head, why are your feet tense? Why are your hands tense? So being able to accurately perceive how our body is, sensing it, right? This is why sensing and learning how to sense is so important. Because if we can't sense, we don't know that we're tight in our jaw or our throat or our breath or our groin or whatever it might be. So I've always loved that paragraph because it really distills this repetition, minimizing effort, minimizing strain, getting really curious with our sensory aspects and feeling what feels better, what doesn't feel better. This makes me think of the tense and relax lesson, where you're going into tension and then you're shifting it. And because of your conscious higher brain, you can shift it, right? You can shift it. And that's sort of the beauty of the human, is we can relearn. We can reintegrate. We can find different ways of doing things that aren't just based on being conditioned. Like, say, our dogs and cats are conditioned to follow, you know, to heal. This is where you eat. This is where you sleep. You know, you can't, it's very hard to reason with a canine. You can teach them, right, through discipline. And of course, if they were treated well, they're more apt to change and learn. But humans, we've got this interesting skill in this brain to really refine. And yes, someone says that's why we can heal. That's why we can heal. So, next line down, the pink line. So, I've already said this, but to repeat, to stimulate. So, again, this is this neurostimulation means to activate. So, we're activating our senses, we're activating our motor neurons to move. We're activating our visual centers. You know, when I ask you to consider and visualize your kidneys and adrenals, you are, if we were to hook you up to the fancy lab stuff that measures brain activity, we would see activity as you think about this body part, as you sense the ground. So all of this is activating your neural networks, essentially. So activation is not a bad thing. The key is that we want to activate. Sorry, we want to feel, learn how to feel activation, but without fear, right? So often in our past, when we've had really intense stressors, we are activated. I'm activated, I'm stimulated, my heart is racing, all these things. And maybe there was ac for sure, maybe there was a threat, a real threat. And so you were afraid. But now, let's just say that threat isn't in your vicinity. It's not in your environment, but the system, it connects, and the fancy word is couples activation with fear. It's like it Velcros it together. And part of our work is detaching, pulling apart that Velcro so that we can feel activation, maybe a high heart rate. Maybe flushness, heat in the face, clammy hands, tightness in the throat, all these things that might suggest a survival stress response. We want to feel that stuff, but not be afraid. And that's the linchpin of this work. We're doing all this work, all this foundational work, so that we can really separate, for many of us, fear, horror, threat, bad, icky feelings, emotions from activation. Okay. So next one down. I'm missing that one on my page. There we go. So A. So this is anything that provides, so again, this is activation, stimulation. This is anything that provides a stimulus to the nervous system, as I've just said, to the nervous system. So, sound, movement, light, and visualizing are all various kinds of stimuli into the human system. So, I'll read these out. You can see them also on your page. Walking, movement, dancing, music, humming, singing, being in the sun, having a warm bath, a cold shower. So, all these things make a shift to the nervous system. To the nervous system. C. Next one. The main purpose of stimulating the system is to challenge it, right? So we want to challenge it. We want to challenge it and wake up. That's the word, or the hyphenated word, wake up. Wake up circuits in the system that have been asleep or have been simply taking a big long rest. That's the final word, rest. Again, when we have been living in survival physiology for so long, the system doesn't know that it can have these differentiated, nuanced responses to activation and stimulation. It's like a bowl, it's like bowl in the china shop. It's just clunky. It's either on or off. So this is where that differentiation comes in. Obviously, this is where the regulation comes in. All the words we've been growing to know, growing capacity, swimming pool getting bigger, taking out the beach balls, taking out the stressors, all of that connects to this. So page three. Page three. So we're going to finish up that concept. So D, top of the page. So in SPSM, pretty much every single lesson and practical neurosensory exercise you did was a form of neurostimulation. So that's the word, neurostimulation. So as you know, you moved, you touched, you learned by a constant synthesis of thinking, sensing. So this is again the sentence on the page I'm just reading. You visualized, you made sound. So all these things, you're using all of your human faculties. So some examples are the next three bullet points, A to C. So the Feldenkraisian way of learning is more potent, I believe. So this was what you would have learned in more depth last week in last week's training call number eight. More potent, I believe, than many forms of neurostimulation because we're doing more than just following the leader. Those are the three words there. Following the leader, so to speak. So what that means is now there's nothing wrong with going to a class and following the instructor. Let's, an exercise class, dance class, yoga class, where you're mimicking and you're seeing them and you're trying to, right? We do learn a lot that way. But the difference between the Feldenkraisian way of learning is we're asking you are asking yourself to sense internally. Are you holding your breath? Where are you posture-wise? Can you sense yourself on the ground? If you think about some of the rolling lessons, rolling like a baby, or the connecting the head and the pelvis lessons, I'm asking you to sense how you move across the floor. As subtle as that is, that helps bring up our awareness. Whereas many people, and I know this from working in movement for many, many years, movement and fitness, they'll do the movement, but they're not even connected to the fact that they have sensation connected to the floor. It really is quite amazing that we can move through the world and not have that sensory awareness. But the trouble is this is where we get into trouble, where we have accidents, where we don't know where things are around us. We might not know that we're holding muscles tense when they don't need to be tense. So that's what I think is so much more potent about this Feldenkraisian way of learning. It doesn't replace fitness, it doesn't replace learning how to dance or anything like that, but it adds another layer of nuance to how you use your brain and your nervous system. So it's adding layers in that often are not taught. Especially as adults, right? And of course, depending on how we were raised as kiddos, we might not have gotten that nice connection to the ground because we weren't allowed the opportunity to be on the floor, to play, to explore. Maybe no one asked us questions. How does that feel? What is that like? Right? So you're not asking yourself those questions as you do these movements with that Feldenkraisian lens. So to continue, B, next line down. Again, this is in reference to stimulation, activation, in this case, the Feldenkrais method. So you're pausing between your thoughts, images, sensations, feelings, reflexes, reactions, all of it, right? So there's that pause, sense, feel. You're thinking about the movement, you're pausing, and then you're moving it. You might even, and I have the next word is imagined. So you're pausing between all this of the imagined movement. So in some cases, I might say, imagine what it might be like to try this, to start to move. And even when you imagine it, you will find that there's little tiny activations of your muscles. You might feel your breath start to hold or get ready for the movement. So that is the level that you want to start to listen to because that's where you can change your nervous system response. You imagine the movement and you go, oh gosh, I've just held my breath. Why is that? I don't need to hold my breath when I think about moving my pelvis. Okay, let's think about moving my pelvis. Okay, I can keep breathing. I can keep my eyes oriented to the ceiling and looking around, and then I move my pelvis. So you're starting to rewire how you move yourself through the world, but without more strain and more effort put in. That is really one of the key principles of this Feldenkraisian learning, right? So you're having this imagined movement from my instruction, and the next word is, and the actual movement. The actual movement. This comes back to what Nikolai Bernstein said in that paragraph, this ability to keep having sensory corrections, right? If you're not putting that awareness hat onto your breath, as an example, you're not even going to notice that it held or that it got tight. So this is also why sometimes you'll do something that seems so simple and you're like, wow, that I'm exhausted after doing that 10-minute or 20-minute lesson. And it's because you're layering in more pieces of awareness. You're not just doing the movement for the sake of doing the movement. So, see, as I just mentioned, you're orchestrating a lot. That's the word, a lot, during the neurosensory exercises. So there's a lot going on. And if you are new to this level of awareness, it's like when a baby is learning how to move and be in the world, it's exhausting. That's why they sleep so much. They need to repair a lot. They need to get the wires connected and have that time to really process and integrate. So again, don't beat yourself up if you're like, gosh, I'm so tired from doing this stuff. And that's because you are forming new pathways and that requires recovery. All right, next one, B, neuromodulation. So again, this is a fancier way of saying regulation, restoring regulation to the system, to the nervous systems. So the first line there, this stage. So again, remember, we're talking about these stages of neuroplastic healing sequencing. So this stage is all about helping the noisy brain. So we could say that overstimulated, threatened, activated brain. So helping that brain, central nervous system, and the autonomic nervous system become more regulated. Simple as that, regulated and settled so it can have a chance to heal. Heal and grow. That's the word. Heal and grow. Next line down. Depending on the person and their history, how to bring the system down and settle it will vary. Vary. So, in other words, there's variety in all of us. We're diverse in our histories and what we've learned, what we've discovered, what we have taken in as healing methodologies. So this concept, this reality of bringing more regulation to our nervous system, it's so individual. And it's really important that you don't compare yourself to others, especially when you read maybe the forum and you see how people are progressing, maybe they're stuck on something. Of course, read and connect to what other people are doing, but know that that is that person's experience. And you've got your experience and your history. And this is where humans are so interesting because we have such diverse histories and backgrounds. Even siblings in the same family system will have completely different ways in which they relate to the world, you know, and the reasons are many, but it just shows that we're more complex than a pack of wolves out roaming, you know, in the woods. Or a pack of, you know, impalas in the African savannah. We're much more complex than that. All right. So what I'm going to do, let's see. I'm going to read a story and then I'm going to get back to page four because this story, I think we're going to break up the routine of the handout. And I'm going to read a story about one of our students. Her name's Samantha. I'm allowed to share this. She is an SBSMer. She studied a bit deeper with me when I was doing my beta programs. She is now almost a somatic experiencing practitioner. And she's also assisting in our SBT training. So this was something that I captured, looks like last year in spring. And one of our exercises when we were doing one of our mentorship programs was I had people review SBSM material. And so she was reviewing the joints lesson. Remember the joint lesson earlier in the labs where you're touching, connecting, feeling where bones come together. So this is her experience. It's a couple pages, so get comfy and I'll read this out. And I just wanted to stress how it's important to review these things. So she says, I've practiced this exercise from SPSM quite a lot, so I thought I would test myself and do it first by myself before listening to the exercise to see if I got it. So she's kind of trying to test herself to see what happens if I just try to do this myself without being guided. So I recommend that for everyone here when you feel like you want to test drive these lessons on your own, of course, do that. She says, I was drawn to work with my feet as I'm experiencing so much intense pain with them this last week. It's been really bad. They are so tight and it's painful to walk. I held underneath my foot where I had the most pain. So she held with her hand and I brought breath into it. And wow, what a huge release. Over the next 4 hours, I had many cycles of intense crying out a lot of emotional pain. So here she is just working with the feet. And from that release, there was emotion trapped in those joints, the joints of the feet. Over the next 4 hours, lots of crying, emotional pain, holding my foot and different toe joints, right? Your toe joints are tiny, really. So she's really being specific with these joints of the toes. So holding these toe joints in different places, feeling the physical pain, giving them support, crying more, letting that wave pass, taking a break, then moving to another place on the foot, the toe joints, and continued the cycles in this way. So she really took some time, right? This isn't something that you would do in just 2 minutes. My sense is this was probably over 20 to 30 minutes, is my sense. I did this again the following day. So she went back to it. There was not much crying left when it came. It was interrupted quickly by a yawn and passed. So a yawn could be a sign of what? Bit of rest, digest, bit of settling, right? I had this feeling to say to myself, and I quote, we're going to be okay, as I soothed my feet. I was talking to myself and myself as a baby. It was very moving. And I know Samantha had early developmental trauma. That's all you need to know. So then I started playing with moving my toes and my feet, curling, uncurling my toes, which I have never been able to do so well, but now they flowed. And I notice I can even feel all my toes touching the floor again. This is new. So that this is that differentiation. Right. So now she can feel her toes separated. And remarkably today, I can move my toes like never before, and the pain is so much better. And I've started to work on the rolling like a baby exercise again. So I want to bridge something here because when we are infants, let's just say we had bad stuff happen to us. Our system isn't going to just be emotional. It won't be emotional because it's preverbal, it's feeling intense stress, and all the muscles and joints are going to contract and be in not just not so much pain, maybe pain, but terror, protection. And so the reason why that rolling like a baby, where you're rolling across back and forth, comes a little later in the labs is because it can actually spark up developmental stuff. Some of us maybe never rolled as babies because we were in cribs. Right? We were fastened to chairs. We weren't put on the floor because it was kind of, I think, in a lot of societies, you don't put a baby on a floor. They have to be in a chair. They have to be in a sitting thing, in a crib. They have to be specifically placed in places. So don't underestimate how powerful and nourishing being on the floor and feeling gently yourself back and forth, feeling your fingers, Feeling your feet press into the ground can be very healing. It can also be very activating if it's never been felt before. So I wanted to just add that in. So she says, when I started this work 4.5 years ago, I was lucky to discover that my physical therapist is also a Feldenkrais practitioner. So I've been practicing Feldenkrais along this trauma work for the last 4 years, but it is always so interesting to see that I can only make so much progress with the Feldenkrais work until we get stuck and we can't make any more progress. So this is again where we can do really good physical therapy work, and there's nothing wrong with seeing a physical therapist or a Feldenkrais practitioner who only knows that. But if you know there's, say, early developmental trauma, it's so important for you to advocate for your needs and say, I might need a little bit more time today because I'm feeling a little something come up as we work with, say, my pelvis or my spine or my shoulders. This is also true if you get body work done, if you get some massage done, you don't want to miss those opportunities. When your massage therapist is working on, say, your calf muscle, and all of a sudden you feel a desire to kick, right? Maybe that's a desire to complete a running response, a flee response. You really want to advocate for these little moments when you're doing work with other practitioners to say, I think I know what this is. Can we just have a pause? And if it's a good practitioner, they will acknowledge that and be glad that you are saying that. And that'll help them learn too, and maybe get interested in the trauma that gets trapped in the system. All right, that was just a bit of a sidebar. So she's saying that she'd work with this practitioner, but they'd always have to stop, they'd have to wait, they'd have to integrate. So she said they've been working with the feet, but it just hasn't been able to work with the Feldenkrais. And so what she's saying is, by working with the joints slowly, softly, it has opened up the skeleton, and now they can work with the feet in a different way. There might be some of you that are like, oh, maybe that's why I couldn't connect with that type of movement class or that kind of physical therapy. There was something still very much frozen in my joints, or in my muscles, or in my fascia, or even in the movement processes. And then she says, there's also something quite interesting that this last week I've sat with my feet in a bowl of hot water because they've been so painful. And this is how I began my trauma work. When I started with Irene's resources and her audio, Four Steps to Calm Overwhelm, I couldn't feel my feet on the floor. She literally couldn't feel her feet on the floor. They were completely dissociated from her body. So I would sit with them in a bowl of hot water while doing the exercise to help me feel them. And then this week, again, I found myself in bowls of hot water, but this time I can feel that I now really feel them like never before. So the significance of this is sometimes we need something external. In this case, she's like, I need a big bowl of hot water to soak my feet in so I can actually feel them, right? So this is where you have to use resources. Maybe it's a hot water bottle, maybe it's an actual bath, maybe it's a heating blanket. Heat is often a good one when things have been really shut down because it stimulates that temperature. So she finally says, after this release with my feet, now this is where we now connect to some meaning. Some meaning. So it's more than just sensation, these next few paragraphs. So after I had this release with my feet, I suddenly remembered a song I heard in French for the first time on the radio the other day. And Samantha doesn't speak French. I had no idea why I wanted to listen to the song in a different language that I couldn't understand. So she's following her impulse. Right? Following impulse. But I was really happy to find this song on YouTube. It's called Sous les racines d'Abus Fantastiques. That's the French saying. I sat and listened to it over and over again and really enjoyed learning it. It felt so good singing along, even though I didn't know the words. Right? So again, following impulse. Then she says, I sent it to the guy I had started to date. That's another remarkable story, who speaks French. So the guy she's dating speaks French. and asked him what it was about. And this is where it's really fun. He said the meaning is you can have roots. You can have roots anywhere and everywhere. We are always growing our roots, no matter how difficult life is or how hard the ground is to you. You will always find the light and continue to grow. So isn't that interesting that she had this attachment, this impulse to listen to this song that she didn't even know what the words were. Turns out it's about roots and feeling the ground. And here she, weeks before, had the impulse to work with her feet. So Sen says, I have some tears now. I'm so touched. I can't believe my impulse led me to this song in a language I don't speak while working on my feet. So this is an interesting story because it just shows how you can take one lesson. In this case, it's the joints lesson. And that's one of the shorter lessons in the neurosensory exercise catalog. And if you can really be with and listen, orient, connect, follow impulse, there can be a lot that bubbles up, right? And so thank you, Samantha, for letting me continue to share that story on this final call. I've shared it a few times. So someone said goosebumps. Yeah, it's a good story. And just know that each one of us, we will have these experiences, and it's very important to trust and not think to yourself, oh, that's silly. Why should I listen to a song in a language I can't understand, right? These are the impulses that you want to follow to see what might be on the other side. Okay, so let's continue. I'm going to have a little more water here. I'll read it out again. The song is titled, here, I'll type it in for those that can't understand French. Sous les racines d'abou fin. Fantastic. There. Sous les racines d'abou fantastique. Oh, maybe Rebecca or Ari, you can do a Google search and find it. But let's not get distracted by the song. Back to page four. So just remembering, we're still talking about modulation. So page number four, top of the page. For our purposes, so all the labs, and really I could say every lab is dedicated to this, but of course, as we get into more lessons into lab 8 and 9 and 10, we're working with more differentiation, way more Feldenkrais in lab 10, for example, right? So lab 10 is really in many ways a higher level lab because one is assuming that one knows how to orient, you know how to connect to the ground, you know how to follow impulse. And so the lessons in lab 10, for example, have a little more differentiation. So, but the first three labs are more dedicated to neuromodulation and regulation. So the first thing there, A, orienting. That's the word, orienting. So orienting can be a powerful tool, as we all know, for settling the system as it sparks up the parasympathetic nervous system and that social engagement nervous system. By looking around with awareness and feeling the head and neck, so that's the first two words, or second and third word. By feeling the head and neck move, it's allowing the system to know where it is, to see cognitively at least that danger isn't actually present, right? So as a reminder, orienting, there's two kinds. There's exploratory orienting, which is what we want to teach, you want to learn. That's what we're teaching, I'm teaching. You want to bring your focus into the world, whether it's far away or close, and explore. We could say bring curiosity to looking. But then, of course, the other form of orienting is defensive orienting, where there's a sound, a threat, the twig snaps, poof, you know, we orient to it, we look. We need that too. We need defensive orienting so that we can assess danger, know that there's something there, go the other way, don't go that way, that sort of thing. Now, of course, if our system is hyper alert and always in defense, always in defensive orienting, the purpose of adding in exploratory orienting is kind of like, again, it's teaching that new language. What might it be like to look a little bit and just consider that tree or that painting or that plant or whatever it might be? And to move the head and neck, because when you defensively orient, what happens to the head and neck? Is it all soft and easy? And no, it's tight, right? And with that, even there might be a breath that is held, right? That a little bit of a freeze response. So again, actively moving and slowing down the head and neck is telling the system, hey, maybe it's not so dangerous out there. Let's just try. Now, for some of you, orienting was like, oh my goodness, why did no one ever teach me this? And for others, it might actually bring more survival stress because you're counteracting the habit of staying hypervigilant, right? You're trying to counteract what was your protective mechanism or is your protective mechanism. So again, that's where even orienting we want to titrate and do without forcing it. B is for breathing. Next one down. So breathing exercises. Of course, the way that I teach breath is very different than what we might call classic breath work, where we're holding for counts of this and that, hold for seven, out for eight, or box breathing, where you're breathing in for five, holding for five, breathing out for five. Those are very therapeutic breath work exercises. But what you learn in SBSM, cultivate the inhale and exhale, those are placing focus on the body, obviously the breath, but we're not trying to force it so much. We're trying to feel it in the case of cultivating the inhale, the ribs, the spine. The exhale is a little different. It's going to the end, waiting, if you can remember, and then letting the breath come in naturally. So back to the handout, just this basic, that's the word, shift in attention can help to settle the system and bring it to rest. And just like with orienting, for some of us, it might help settle, for others, it might not. This is again where you have to learn why those are different for some people, for you. This also serves to increase awareness, capacity, and help to lessen the bracing, that's the word. Bracing, we could say bracing pattern that occurs in the true diaphragm due to stored traumatic experiences, toxic and chronic stress. So bracing is just a fancy, accurate word for body armoring, for if you think about, brace, the car is about to crash. Now, not the best visual, but that's where we hear brace, brace, or on airlines, they'll say if there's a crash, you need to, brace yourself against something. But the body does that. So when there has been a threat, a stress, without us even thinking about it, the system prepares, right? It goes into army mode, armor mode, I should say. And we need that when there is an actual threat. This is where the breath holds, right? The diaphragm might get stuck. And for many of us, we don't come out of that naturally. And so we stay stuck in these bracing patterns, not just in the true diaphragm, but in the muscles, the fascia, the skeleton, right? All these tissues can stay held and tight. And then, of course, that has consequences because then our spine doesn't move as well as it can. Our ribs don't move as well as it can. So then the spine doesn't move and then the pelvis doesn't move. And it's like this ripple effect. So this is again why it is not enough to just focus on sensation, focus just on emotion, think our problems away. We have to get into these body tissues. We have to get into the body tissues and the movement. C, next one down. Potent posture. So this one, while more stimulating because you're standing upright, I really recommend if you haven't gone back and redone the potent posture lesson now with more awareness that you have, go back. It is the gift that can keep on giving because it's we're meant to be upright, right? Humans are the only bipedal mammal, truly. It takes us forever to get to our feet when we're little, and it's because of this verticality, and our center of mass is so precarious. And so because of that precarious nature, and if we're not sensitive, we might be in a posture every day without realizing that we're using more effort than we have to. And so go back that there, that's the homework for the week. In addition to your labs, go back and do potent posture and see if you have more nuance and more sensitivity to that posture. So potent posture, while more stimulating due to the upright position, it's challenging the body's balance organs, so the inner ear, and demanding a focused, that's the word, focused attention to body position and standing. So it's a neurostimulation exercise. Due to this focused attention, it can settle the nervous system. I use that word very strategically. It can settle the nervous system. You might find that you live your life always too far back on your heels, or you might find that you live your life way too far forward on your toes, or you're always on one side or on the other. And when you can find that sweet spot, that Goldilocks spot, you might sense your breath get a little easier, right? And just feeling that sensation, this goes back to Bernstein's quote, right? Memorizing these sensations, meaningfully absorbing and memorizing these sensations. That's why we want to repeat these lessons. Oh, wow. Yeah, right. When I'm on my heels, I hold my breath. My hands want to brace because they're trying to keep me up. As soon as I come back to what feels like I'm too far forward, I actually relax. That's what you want to memorize. That's the learning, right? That's how you treat yourself into this ease, even though it might feel foreign. D, next one down. Diaphragms, joints, kidney adrenals, brainstem. It's that rolling the head lesson. Again, that's classically brought in from the Feldenkrais method. Softening just the touch, all these things, gut brain, the mediastinum that's working around that heart space, and bringing more focused attention, that's the word, attention, to even more specific parts of the body. So I name these just to remind everyone how much, especially if you're into like lab aid and such, how much you've done already. You know, you've sketched in these parts of your body that maybe a year ago or weren't even in your awareness. So now you can tune into yourself. This is that interoception you're building up. You're more likely to realize, wow, I'm really struck. I can feel my tightness. I can think my kidney adrenals are like on fire and they're a bit too much on guard. I need to chill out a little bit, right? For those that don't have that awareness, they can go on and on for life, and then all of a sudden, poof, someone gets sick because they don't realize that they have been stressed for so long. So again, it's just this attention, this focused attention to these areas really helps us come out of that survival stress so that we can come out, let down a little bit, repair the system. E, final bullet point there. Plus, there's more visualization of the system opening up. So again, if we don't visualize this stuff, chances are it's not going to change just because of our higher brain and how it can keep us from feeling these things. So more visualization of the system opening up, that's the word. More space, That's the next word. More space. Increasing. And even in the case of the kidney adrenals, decrease, that's the final word of the page, decrease of the body's stress chemicals. There are more than adrenaline and cortisol, but those are the key ones we think of when we think of stress chemicals. So again, that visualization can really impact the biochemistry of your body when you are talking to, soothing, connecting with, in this case, the kidney adrenals, but everything else that's around it, the diaphragms, the gut, et cetera. Page five. So this is a continuation. We're still on neuromodulation. It's a big one. So bottom line, by bringing the focus and attention to key stress organs, as I just mentioned, kidney adrenals, that's the word stress organ, kidney adrenals, brainstem, gut, and to areas of the body that get tight and shut down, such as the joints, diaphragms, mediastinum spaces, as a result of excess and toxic stress, stored stress, traumas, again, keep it simple. All the balls in your swimming pool, right? We're working with that stuff. We are facilitating a shift from survival, that's the word, survival, sympathetic fight, flee energy, and parasympathetic freeze. I'm going to add in shut down energy. To the social engagement. And then in brackets, mammalian parasympathetic energies. So we're trying to swing everything over from this survival, stress, chaos, shutdown, collapse, freeze, hypervigilance. And we're trying to move our way over to more of the parasympathetic ventral vagal rest digest energy. Let's keep going. A little bit more review here. So said another way, in order to become more evolved humans, because when we're stuck in survival, we aren't very evolved, right? We're in our survival stress chemistry. We need to get out of this survival stress. So in order to become more evolved humans, when we're under duress or stress that isn't life-threatening, we want to lessen the time we are in our high dorsal, so that's the word. This is coming back to reviewing your biology of stress videos. High dorsal vagal, so that shutdown, freeze, parasympathetic nervous system, and or the high fight flee sympathetic nervous system. So fight flee are the words. We want to come out of that to a lot of ventral vagal, ventral. So that's that social engagement. Remember that social engagement nervous system goes directly to the heart's pacemaker. It helps modulate and bring us down in a very nice, easy way, as opposed to the freeze shutdown is like, phew, it stops really quickly. It's clunky. It's like trying to stop your car with the emergency brake. If you've ever had to do that, it's very jarring on the car, but it stops you. Right? Stopping and slowing down with ventral is like that nice smooth brake on the car, right? Have you ever driven with someone who don't know how to use the brake properly? And it's just like stop, start, stop. It's like really, and you get a little activated because you're constantly in this. So think of that ventral. It's like this very delicate, dexterous slowing down. Right, so ventral vagal social engagement and low tone dorsal. That's the next word, dorsal. That's the true rest digest of the parasympathetic nervous system. So this is kind of coming back to the basics that we learned at the very beginning of our lessons, just the basics of the autonomic nervous system. So, final word of this section. We want to go I'll say this and then I'll explain it. We want to go from reptilian to mammalian to human. Now, from reptilian to mammalian to human. Now, this is from a nervous system perspective. Nothing wrong with reptiles. Nothing wrong with the mammals out there that are not human. They're all wonderful, right? I'm talking about the hierarchy of how our nervous system relates to the world, right? So fight, flight, and freeze is very reptilian. It's very primitive, right? If you've ever been around little geckos and that, you come up to them, they poop, they freeze, right? You can't really have a conversation in the way you can with a friendly dog, right? The little gecko doesn't look at you and its ears don't perk up. It is reptilian, right? Whereas our good old friendly mammals, if they're healthy and safe, they'll let you come. Well, lions and tigers a little differently, but friendly dogs, cats, when they're healthy, we can talk to them. They know when we're happy, when we're like they have got that connection. Then, of course, humans, we've got this conundrum because we have the reptilian physiology, we have the mammalian physiology, and then we have the human physiology, which is this higher brain that can stop us from healing, but it can also start us healing. Right? We can learn and relearn and keep relearning. I always say over and over again, despite how much trauma so many of us have survived and have been through, horrific abuses, the fact that you are here is massive. Yeah. Like we're doing really important work here. So you are living in that human brain because you wouldn't be here if you weren't living in that human brain. So give yourself a lot of credit for being here and learning the way you might in university. Right. So really, really feel into that because it's really important. And that shows that you have moved into that human brain to figure out the reptilian, right? These primitive reflexes that your body is stuck in. Very important. All right. C, neurorelaxation. This one's pretty simple. Need I say more? We need to rest. Again, the history of humanity, especially in the West, has been to push and push and go and create. And I have nothing against good parts of that. But because of our survival physiology, that reptilian physiology, conditioning, our ancestry, them not healing this stuff, we have been given on a platter a lot of old stuff that we're trying to rewire and shift. And so for some of us, when we start to get more regulated, one thing, and maybe some of you have experienced this, as you get more regulated, you might feel kind of boring and like, why do I just feel kind of like, well, I don't feel that zing of adrenaline in the same way I do, but I'm actually healthier. My gut's better. My immune system is better. My sleep is better. I'm just a little more happier just making my food and connecting with my dog and going for a walk and talking to the birds. Why don't I have any drive? And what I would say is that a lack of drive, or are you just feeling regulation for the first time and you're not looking for that trauma response? So that can be a foreign feeling, right? It can be odd and confusing, and you have to watch it because if you're not used to that foreign feeling, what happens when you're in a foreign place? I need to get back to my familiar place. But what if that familiar place is actually not where you want to be because it is survival based? This is where people tend to sabotage themselves. It's too good. I'm going to get into a shitty relationship. It's too good. I'm going to get into another car accident. You're not wanting it, but the system is searching for that familiarity. So just be aware that at the beginning of this, you might feel like things are a little boring and you might need more rest. And a lot of folk, especially those of you who are living with and healing chronic conditions, chronic fatigue, and maybe you're feeling more fatigue because you are coming out of your functional freeze, It can be very scary to think, am I ever going to not want to rest for the entire day? And that's where you have to trust that eventually that energy will fill up. But you maybe are recovering from not only your lifetime, but lifetimes of your ancestors living and surviving through all the things that they had to survive through. So be gentle with yourself. So, as I have here, depending on where we are in our lives, demands, tasks, jobs, we might not always get what we need. But when we can rest and sleep, so when we do go into rest, digest, this is the key part. A lot of us might think we're resting, but we're constantly thinking about things, or we're scrolling on our phones, or we're ruminating. So, when we rest and sleep, we really want it to. This is a very technical word you're about to write down. Ooze. Like, think of like good chocolate chip cookies oozing goodness, right? When they're bubbling, like, or a nice apple crumble oozing, the scent and smells of that kind of stuff. We want it to ooze that low tone. That's the word, low tone dorsal branch of the parasympathetic. We want to really harvest and harness that recovery mode. We want to harvest that recovery mode. Page six. Personal, that's the word, personal assessment is a must. And you must change and prioritize to suit your needs. So, I'm sure there's some young parents here. If you're doing this work while you're also trying to raise a human, I commend you, because you're going to have to override sometimes when you don't want to feed your children or help them with things, because you know you have to because of what you've been learning here. You're going to have to attune to them. You're going to have to put your stuff to the side for a little bit and know, okay, I'll work on that when they're asleep, right? For some of us, we are in a situation in life where we're not looking after children, or maybe we didn't have children. Maybe we don't have a lot to take care of and we have more focus to work on this stuff. For some of us, we might have a job or five jobs, and we're trying to juggle that stuff along with keeping up with all the things. So again, you have to figure out, what can I fit in? How can I fit this in with not without being more survival stressed? Because if you are freaking out because you can't fit in the neurosensory exercises, that's defeating the purpose. So that's where integrating the simple things is important. When you're grocery shopping, can you just take a little bit more time to feel your feet, to breathe, to look around? When you're at home, maybe you don't have time to have 30 minutes or 40 minutes, maybe plug in 5 minutes of a lesson and just do a little bit. Right. So as humans, we tend to get into this. If I can't do it perfect, I won't do it all at all, at all. Right. And so, how can you be just good enough with the work you're doing? Just like no one is going to be a perfect parent, but how can you be good enough, attune enough, right? Do what you can, but keep improving upon those things. Final piece, neurodifferentiation. This was really covered in last week's call where we got deeper into the Feldenkraisian learning, but just as a review, my choice of teaching you guys neurodifferentiation is through the Feldenkraisian lens, because that's my train, one of my trainings. So the first line there, Feldenkraisian learning is neurodifferentiation. How can we make the learning, the neurostimulation, more complex? So that's the word complex, and still keep up the neuromodulation. So this is the sweet sauce, the sweet spot, I should say. We want to increase our skill and how we're learning. We want to increase and make it more challenging. Because we want to do that, especially when we have a bit more baseline regulation. Our capacity is bigger, our swimming pool is bigger, we're really good at following our impulses. So to go to that higher level of really improving your human capacity and mastery, we want to add more complexity, but you want to add it without going into a stress response. There might be a little edge of activation, but you don't want to be doing higher advanced lessons or learning a skill and being stressed out. Because for so many of us, I'll use the example of school, we were stressed out in school all the time for many of us. I actually saw a really interesting meme the other day, and I thought about this. It was in relationship to parents who homeschool their children, which is becoming more popular these days. And it was something like my kid wanting a third breakfast or something in the morning when I homeschool them. Like, why are these kids so hungry in the morning? Like, what's going on? And I was like, I bet it's because they're at home and they're more safe. Whereas I hear so many stories of parents sending their children to school with lunch and they don't eat any of their food. And I'm like, I bet it's because they're stressed out. This is just my hypothesis. Are they not eating because they are stressed out? And we know for some of us, I know some of us when we're stressed, we eat more, but for some of us when we're stressed, we don't eat. We're not hungry because we're running on adrenaline. And I thought that was really interesting. I was like, huh, I wonder if those kids are just getting the food that they really need because they're in a healthy learning environment and they're not stressed. So this comes back. That's just my little story of we want to improve and increase the complexity of our learning, but we don't want to put ourselves into survival stress. Final one, C. It all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves. I use that word testing deliberately. It's okay to test ourselves. It's okay to challenge ourselves. It's okay to be like, am I getting better at this? Self-assessment. Self-assessment. And breaking out of our comfort zones. Our comfort zones. Comfort is the word. While staying present. Present is the next word. And oriented, next word, to ourselves and our environment. Continually recalibrating and lowering our stress chemistry, that's the next word. So we'll say it again. It all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves and breaking out of our comfort zones. Comfort zones while staying present and oriented to ourselves and our environment. Continually recalibrating and lowering our stress chemistry. And then the final word of the day, and remembering to go back to the basics. Final word of all the training calls, basics, frequently. Don't underestimate the basics, right? All the basics that you learned in the first few labs, keep coming back to them. Keep practicing them, review them, see how you can multitask them together. That's all, folks. That's all, and that's a lot. That was a lot of information as we wrap up the theory, practice, how that applies, how we integrate it. Of course, for those who are new this session, you are just beginning to move into this process, this scholastic decision to learn about your body, your nervous system, to practice, to integrate it. For all of our alum, thank you for continuing to show up and do this stuff and make it more complex and more integrated and more differentiated. Thank you, Rebecca and Ari, for being here and checking out the chat and keeping things going there. As always, Seth will have his final Q&A this Thursday for all of you. And then we'll have a wrap-up call next Tuesday. It'll be really simple. We'll do some real basic guided neurosensory exercise, set some intentions for how we move into the next little while with our work. And just a reminder, I will always repeat this over and over again, just be proud of the work you're doing. Know that not many humans on this planet have done this level of learning and deep dive. So you are leading the way for more regulation in the world at large. You really are. So keep doing it. Take breaks as needed, and we'll see you next Tuesday. All right. Have a good rest of your day or night. You're welcome, everyone. Bye.